You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In this study summary, Robert Silicano of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine discusses new approaches for understanding and evaluating the efficacy of antiretroviral drugs. After the discussion, Dr. Silicano will answer questions.
What I'm going to talk about today is a new way of looking at how well heart works. As you know, in patients who are doing well on treatment, the viral load becomes undetectable. It's below the limit of detection of clinical assays. But with special assays developed by John Coffin and others, you can still see a small amount of free virus in the plasma. This is called residual viremia. And there's been a big argument in the field about whether this represents simply the release of virus from stable reservoirs, such as the one that our lab has been studying for a long time, or alternatively that it represents a continuous replication of the virus that's occurring because the drugs haven't really completely controlled replication. And the latter scenario is clearly a disturbing one because it raises a possibility of the evolution of resistance. So I'm going to argue that the residual viremia is due to release the virus from stable reservoirs. We've directly analyzed the residual viremia. We don't see evidence for it evolving. What we do see, though, is that it seems to be coming from at least two different sources, this latent reservoir in T cells that we described a long time ago and another as yet unidentified reservoir, and that is a disturbing result with regard to eradication. But I think the optimistic thing is that we don't see evidence for ongoing replication. And really the definitive experiment that people in the field have been proposing for a long time is to intensify therapy, take a patient who's doing well on treatment and add a fourth drug and see whether this trace amount of viremia goes down anymore. It turns out, and we have done this in collaboration with John Coffin and others, it turns out that it doesn't. And what this means is that we have already reached the theoretical limit of antiretroviral therapy. We will never reduce viremia any further using antiretroviral drugs because this little bit of free virus that's in the plasma is not coming from new cycles of replication. It's actually coming from cells that were infected prior to therapy. And so if we want to get rid of the virus, of course, we have to deal with these stable reservoirs. But I think, you know, the optimistic conclusion is that the drugs that we have now actually, in an adherent patient, completely stop the virus from replicating. And a lot of people still have trouble with this idea, and most of the work I'm going to talk about today is actually a pharmacologic explanation of how that actually is. It turns out that there is what we think is sort of a missing dimension in the analysis of how well antiretroviral drugs work. It has to do with the steepness of the dose response curve. And if you take that into account, what you find is that the drugs are actually way more effective than we thought they were. And just to give you an example, some of the best protease inhibitors can produce a 10-log reduction in a single round of infection. That's a 10-billion-fold inhibition. And this was not apparent before because the assays really weren't available to see this. But we think that by analyzing the inhibitory, we call this the inhibitory potential of antiretroviral drugs in the correct way, we'll be able to do a better job of choosing drug regimens, and particularly in the case of patients who are failing therapy, choosing salvage regimens by really knowing how much replication is occurring in the patient and how much each drug actually inhibits replication or contributes to the inhibition of replication. We'll have a more rational approach to choosing drug therapy.
Okay, so why don't we open it up to questions about the conference in general and Dr. Silicano's work and presentation.
Do you think at the end of the day that we should continue down the road towards the kind of eradication that you've described, or whether we should really be promoting research in the basic sciences that look at ways in which we can physically get our bodies to coexist with the virus?
Well, I think we should be pursuing strategies for eradication. And the first step in eradication is stopping the virus from replicating. And I would say that step has been accomplished as a result of the efforts of everybody who participated in the development of heart. And now what remains to do, and which actually may prove much harder to do, is to find all of the stable reservoirs. We know there's at least two, and find ways to eliminate them. And there are, there's a lot of momentum now to try and do that.
What are the implications of this for when to start therapy? Do reservoirs continue to be seeded over the course of active infection, and would we be able to start immediately, or what?
Yeah, that's a good question. When we looked in patients who were treated during acute infection, during symptomatic primary HIV infection, and then kept on heart for a couple of years, the reservoirs were already established. It's possible that by catching people very, very quickly, we may reduce the size to some extent, and it's possible that delayed treatment may increase the size slightly. But I don't think that's really going to give us a way to attack the problem.
Do you know what percentage comes from the known reservoirs and what percentage comes from the unknown reservoirs?
Yeah, so in about half of the patients that we've analyzed, more than half of the residual viremia is coming from this alternative source. But in other patients, we don't see this. So we still have a lot of work to do. And the problem is that it's extremely difficult to do these studies because the number of viruses that are present in the blood of somebody who's doing well on treatment, the average level, actually, as John has shown, is about one virus particle per mil of plasma. And so it's actually extraordinarily hard to collect these viruses and analyze them. But I guess the best I can say right now is that in about half of the patients, the residual viremia is dominated by this alternative source.
I'm wondering if you have any clues about what the mystery reservoir might be and what some of the possible candidates might be.
Well, our current hypothesis is that it represents infection of a progenitor cell in the monocyte macrophage lineage, and then that cell proliferates after infection, and when it does, it copies the viral genome without any mutation into multiple progeny cells that go off and produce the same identical virus. And the reason I say this is because the unique characteristic of this predominant plasma population is that it's very oligoclonal, which is very unusual in HIV infection. HIV tends to diversify very dramatically, and so finding an oligoclonal population is very unusual. And one way to explain it is that it's being generated sort of by cell division, which copies an integrated viral genome without error. But we don't actually know the cell source. And we can't find it in the blood. Any of the cells in the blood, we can't find it.
Why is it that the virus doesn't continue to seed reservoir sites with ongoing replication?
In patients on heart? Well, if there is ongoing replication in a patient who's not on treatment or who's failing therapy, there will be new sequences being deposited in these reservoirs. The size of the latent reservoir in resting T cells is very small. It's one in a million cells, and it's not an efficient process by which these reservoirs are generated. And when you have suppression of replication to below 50 copies per mil, there are just no new infection events, and the reservoir is not turning over anymore. You're just left with what you had when you started heart. There had been the idea that the reservoirs were being continuously replenished, and we've directly looked at that, and we don't see that.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.